the January 6th committee met today for the seventh time to discuss new evidence regarding the attack on Congress on January 6th, 2021, as it certified Joe Biden's victory in the presidential election. The committee reviewed the impact of extremist groups like the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys in the Capitol insurrection. It also looked at the collaboration between those groups and allies of former President Donald Trump. We want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. What did you find surprising about today's hearing? Did you hear anything that makes you feel differently about the attack on the Capitol? What do you think still needs to be covered? What questions do you want to hear answered? And who do you want to hear from? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@wpr.org. Susan Johnson is an associate professor of political science and assistant dean at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. Susan, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Susan, today's hearing covered a lot of ground, from the internal politics at the White House to external groups like the Proud Boys. What stuck out to you about what we heard today?
Wow, there was so much. I think big picture, what stuck out to me is what's been sticking out to me across all of these hearings is how consistently those who are presenting this information, the members of Congress, are relying considerably on Republicans and members of the Trump administration to make their case. And the primary goal this afternoon was to make the case that there was a certain level of coordination between the White House and White House aides and hangers-oners, I would say, for the Trump administration, and then some of these extremist groups. And I think that they painted a very clear picture in that regard.
One of the former Trump officials to recently agreed to testify for the committee was a former White House counsel, Pat Cipollone. And we saw some of that testimony today on video. What role do you, or what is the significance, do you think, of him now contributing to this committee's work?
Well, I think that when you have someone like Pat Cipollone, who had been the White House counsel, who is someone that would therefore have been very close to a lot of the discussions that were happening about the everything post-election through January 6th and then beyond, and not being willing to testify and then changing his mind and agreeing to sit down for the closed-door testimony, which we then were able to see some clips of today, I think it's one more person who can validate what we've been hearing has been going on. One of the points that they wanted to make was that he did not, in his testimony, did not contradict things that Cassidy Hutchinson had mentioned last week as far as what her experiences had been working with Mark Meadows. So I think he's an important witness. I think, again, just to point out that it's another person who was close to the administration, who's also a Republican, who is making these claims.
And as you said, a lot of the people that have testified, former Trump officials, were not testifying previously, were not speaking out about these things as they were happening. Does that speak to the committee having some success with its subpoena power?
I think that part of it, perhaps, we can attribute to its subpoena power, particularly given the fact that, as we know, Steve Bannon, who has refused the subpoena, is to go on trial next week for a contempt of Congress charge. I think that what we're seeing is that people who perhaps thought that this was going to go away, to not have as much impact, their initial reaction is to say they're not interested in participating, but then you get kind of a waterfall effect, and that as one person goes over and participates, then there's a greater, a greater urgency perhaps to also participate, and then absolutely there's the threat of contempt charges.
And one of the timelines that the committee focused on very closely today was mid-December of 2020. On December 14th, President Biden was officially, in some ways, declared president by the electors around the country. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell acknowledged that. Then on December 18th, a group of lawyers and other folks, including General Michael Flynn, Sidney Powell, met with Trump at the White House, at first without any other White House officials there. Can you talk a bit more, Susan, about that meeting and why it's getting so much attention?
Yeah, I think it's really important for listeners to understand just how controlled the access is in the White House. And hearing today of what transpired with people, a group of people making their way into the Oval Office and speaking to the president without senior staff and others in the room, that just doesn't happen. And one of the accounts I read referred to this as one more example of a White House in chaos. And one of the things that came out today was the fact that when White House senior staff found out that this meeting was taking place, that there was just this mad rush for staff members to get into the room. And then there was apparently shouting and foul language being used and things of that sort, which is not necessarily how we expect things to go in the White House. And I think the key takeaway here is that this demonstrates that there were people in the White House who were very concerned about what potentially was being discussed or planned around resisting the lawful transition of power.
We're talking with Susan Johnson right now, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Whitewater, looking at today's January 6th committee hearing. Taking your calls as well at 800-642-1234. What stuck out to you today? What more do you want to hear? Let us know. Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Susan, one of the things that happened in that meeting was, I believe, a draft executive order was brought to President Trump that outlined some fairly radical steps about how to preserve power and delay certification of results of the election. What stuck out to you about that?
Well, I think, honestly, at the most basic level, the fact that it was ever even drafted by anyone. And I think that these things shouldn't surprise me, but at a certain level, they still do. And the fact that there was this idea that the president could, by executive order, just say, you know, X, Y, and Z, it's still, again, it demonstrates just a lack of understanding of the democratic process, or maybe a lack of a willingness to accept the democratic process as it's out there. And it also speaks to what voices were most prominent around former President Trump at the time.
And shortly after that meeting, actually the next morning early, President Trump sent out a tweet saying that people could come to Washington on January 6th for a rally. It was going to be, quote, wild. And I think something we found out today was just the power of the bully pulpit and how much of an impact that tweet had online. Can you talk about the galvanizing effect of the president's words on Twitter?
Well, I mean, as we know, the president, former President Trump, used Twitter, many would argue quite effectively, to get his message out beyond what we traditionally expect the way a president would get his message out. And I think this was one of those examples where immediately after he tweeted, we began to see all kinds of responses to that tweet that demonstrated that people were taking his words to mean that there was going to be something very significant and potentially violent happening. And I think it's important to understand that that's the point that the members of Congress leading the hearings today were trying to get across, that there were people who were directly responding to that tweet and beginning to make plans and speak very violently about bringing handcuffs and pepper spray and get ready to fight and all of that directly as direct responses to that tweet.
And Trump associates Robert Stone and General Michael Flynn were among the people who we found out had contact with the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys, a lot of these groups that had online sway and were responding to the president's words. What do we find out about their contacts with those groups?
Yeah, we heard that there were people, as you mentioned, like Roger Stone and others, who were in direct contact through encrypted forums and the like, in making plans, discussing what was going to happen on January 6th. And again, that's the point of what they're trying to get across in these hearings, is that you had these people very close to the president, people who were involved in a lot of those meetings at the White House, who were also engaging with the Proud Boys leader, Enrique Tarrio, and leaders of the Oath Keepers and others.
We're talking with Susan Johnson right now, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Whitewater. She's talking with us today about the evidence revealing the impact of extremist groups in the January 6th Capitol insurrection from today's committee hearing. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are you still hoping to learn about from these hearings? Have these hearings changed the way you're looking at the attack on the Capitol? What do you think needs to be investigated further? Who else do you want to hear from? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. The conversation continues coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Dean Knetter. Right now, we're picking up the conversation with Susan Johnson, political science professor at UW-Whitewater. We're looking at today's January 6th committee hearing and new evidence that was presented. We're also taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Let's go to the calls now. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Hi, Marcus.
Hey, Dean. So my comments are this. I think that we need to understand, even though sometimes it may appear like there's two judicial systems in this country, we must understand that there is nobody who is above the law in this country, because otherwise our democracy is not going to work. The second thing is that the statement I was just following orders or instructions didn't work for the Nazis at Nuremberg and isn't going to work now. And so people need to understand that, you know, you got to think for yourselves, because this is not acceptable and this will not allow. A house divided shall not stand.
Marcus, thanks for the call. Marcus there, I think, referring to the question of accountability for some in the White House and perhaps the president himself. Susan, what have we heard about the potential for anything beyond this committee in terms of criminal charges?
Well, as we've heard continually from the committee, is that what their role would be is to refer information to the Justice Department and for potential criminal indictment. And what there's been a lot of pressure, I would say, from people who believe that the Justice Department, Attorney General Merrick Garland, they're not working quickly enough. And a lot of people on the left in particular, obviously, would like to see more quick action. I would point to some of the comments that Congresswoman Liz Cheney has made, both during the hearings and then when she's been interviewed outside of the hearings, in regard to the way she speaks about the illegality of some of the actions by President Trump, and signaling, I believe, that there should be criminal consequences or penalties applied as high up as need be. And so I think that sometimes the wheels of justice turn slowly, and that's what we're seeing right now. But I think there's some significant urgency as well, and I'm hearing that from the caller.
Marcus, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go next to Saul in Stevens Point. Hi, Saul.
Hi, good afternoon. I had two brief comments and a question. The comments, Steve Cipollone, I thought, was a very reluctant and sort of a prissy witness. You know, he stepped around. He acted the lawyer, but he didn't show any kind of emotional involvement. So I don't know that they're going to get much out of him. I'll find out later. Secondly, I thought he was just basically shamed into it by Ms. McCutcheon. So second thing is, they wasted a lot of time highlighting tweets and comments. Every pimply 17-year-old probably gets a big charge out of saying ridiculous things on the Internet. So it would have been more useful to use FBI evaluations of what the noise was on the Internet about this, rather than just citing silly comments by people that who are unidentified. The third is a question, and that is, are they going to get anything useful out of Steve Bannon, or is he just, you know, he just using this as a way to get out of his indictment?
Saul, thanks for the call. Let's pick up on Saul's second point first there, Susan. A lot of attention today on tweets, like we mentioned, the kind of impact of the president's words, but that's different than tapes, comments from the president himself. What do you think the committee's aim was today in highlighting all of those, that online activity?
First of all, I agree with the comments that that the caller made as far as both of the two comments. I think that they were trying to demonstrate the cumulative effect of many, many, many tweets, many people putting out there that they believed that they were getting their marching orders from President Trump, and that therefore when people showed up on January 6th, that they were doing so because the president told them to. So I think the goal was to show the cumulative effect because there were so many.
And Saul also mentioned Steve Bannon, who agreed recently to cooperate with the January 6th committee. That could be an interesting witness. Susan, what are you watching out for with Steve Bannon's work with the committee?
There's a lot of people who are quite suspicious of Bannon's motives on a couple of different fronts. So first of all, there's the obvious one, which is he has a trial starting next week on contempt and a hope that perhaps his participation would make that a moot point. The judge has already indicated that's not the case. The trial is going to move forward either way. A second thing that I've read is the concern that his willingness to testify would be a way for him to spout some of the misstatements and falsehoods and propaganda as a way to try to derail the hearings and get a lot of attention on him, because we know that that should he testify, that will quote unquote trump a lot of what we've already heard. And it will really get people, the media, I would say, to focus a lot on every word he says, and that will detract from the other work that the committee is doing.
Time for one more call. We'll go to Jeff in Superior. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, good afternoon. I, you know, used to be a Democrat. I voted for Democrats in the past. But I refuse to be brainwashed by what the Democratic Party is doing in these hearings. They held no hearings during the Black Lives Matter riots and Antifa damage that they did to our country. So these hearings are politically biased. I also believe President Trump had a responsibility to maintain, his executive branch power, because he was president until January 20th. Now, Hillary lost her popular vote. Gore lost her popular vote. So I know the Democrats had to cheat in the Electoral College. And we know that those ballot boxes in Madison were ruled illegal by the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. And there were other illegal votes counted and illegal ballots counted.
Jeff, I'm going to jump in there because the State Supreme Court ruling did clarify election guidance, but did not say that votes in Madison were fraudulent. But Susan, to Jeff's point of political bias and presidential power until the 20th, is it safe to say that what happened on the 6th goes a little bit beyond that?
Well, I don't think that anyone is questioning the fact that President Trump was president until President Biden was sworn in. I don't think that's up for debate. I think the issue being covered right now has to do with what role did President Trump have in inciting a riot, an insurrection at the Capitol. I don't think that they're mutually exclusive.
Sure. And two other people we heard today, witnesses today that we heard from, Susan, were Stephen Ayers, who was at the Capitol on January 6th, and the former spokesperson for the Oath Keepers, Mr. Jason Van Tatenhove. Can you talk about what they brought to the hearings today?
Yeah, I think Mr. Ayers was put in front of the committee. He's someone who has been—he's going on trial for his participation in the event, and I think he put a face to the tweets, maybe in the context that he explained why he was there and that he believed that he should come because Trump, asked them to come. The court documents have shown that he put an image on Facebook saying that. Taking a Twitter post from former President Trump and saying that's why he was going. So that's why he was there. And then as far as Mr. Van Tatenhove, his idea was to provide background on what the Oath Keepers really are, given that he had been involved in that organization as its spokesperson. So he could speak to the role that they play in, I guess, disrupting their role in being a disruptive organization.
Sure. And Susan, in our last 30 seconds or so, what are you watching for next? What are you hoping to hear?
Well, they gave us a prelude to what was going to be covered in the next hearing, and that's going to be how President Trump behaved actually while the insurrection was going on January 6th. So, I'll be curious to see what else is there. And I do want to hear more about what Cipollone has to say, and they did tease that a little bit as well as they were closing up today.
Well, I'm sure we'll talk again. Susan, thanks as always for joining us.
I'm happy to do it. Thank you for having me.
That was Susan Johnson, an associate professor of political science and assistant dean at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. She joined us today to talk about the January 6th committee hearing earlier this afternoon.